and welcome to Open Finance, the podcast series that believes the future of finance is open, brought to you by Finastra. In this series, we're exploring what can be done to address AI bias and what embedded finance means for the future of banks. I'm Helen Driver, founder of MoneyReady, a financial education platform and a former fund manager. In this episode, we're looking at what fintechs can do to tackle climate change. To discuss this, I'm joined by Julianne Flesher, CEO and co-founder of ESG reporting company Nossa Data, Finastra's global ESG director, Jay Mucky, and Antonias Saglis, senior director for corporate development and ESG at Piraeus Financial Holdings. Welcome to you all. Julianne, perhaps we can start with you. Can you briefly tell us about your work at Nossa Data?
Thank you so much, Helen. So I'm Julianne. I'm one of the co-founders and CEO of Nossa Data. And what Nossa Data does is we work directly with the corporates, so with the companies themselves, and help them with the collection, the aggregation, and the verification of their E, S, and G data. So these would be any data points ranging from carbon emissions and water usage through staff diversity or workforce turnover.
Thank you. And turning to you, Antonios, can you briefly tell us about your role at Piraeus Bank?
Well, Piraeus Bank represents the leading bank in Greece in terms of customer deposits and gross loans. Actions for the restoration of the Greek economy towards a sustainable goal and supporting local communities to the great challenges of our time, including climate change, is a priority for us. Our ESG unit has been recently established, and its mission more or less is to coordinate and promote the bank's ESG's activities and support the work of all business units. We act sort of a link between the board of directors and the executive units of the bank.
Thank you, Antonios. And Jay, can you briefly talk about your role at Finastra?
Sure, Helen. Hi, everyone. So my name is Jay Mucky. I work at Finastra. It's a global fintech company. I look after and lead the ESG strategy. That really has two focuses. The first is internally measuring our ESG performance in collaboration with all our ESG stakeholders, and externally managing our community development philanthropy programs, as well as how we think about repurposing our solutions to address environmental and social issues.
The role of banks and other financial institutions has been in the spotlight with the Climate Change Summit in Glasgow. There's been a commitment by a number of countries to stop financing new fossil fuel projects, and $130 trillion has been committed to Mark Carney's Financial Alliance for Net Zero. Can we begin with you, Antonios, exploring what role traditional banks have in fighting climate change?
The combination of an externally induced change and catch-up investments, like the example you just mentioned, creates a momentum that many sectors, including the financial sector, should leverage to accelerate initiatives across all functions, both to win today and in the future. In pursuing these initiatives, we need to directly support many of the actions and rigorously focus on reimagining the business offer and recreating business value for clients and stakeholders. We are aware of the key role that bank has to assume in supporting this transition to a more resilient and carbon neutral model for all the economies around the world. This is no other than financing investments and attracting private sector resources. A Greek bank like ours should provide the appropriate financing tools and advisory to enable businesses that operate in Greece to adopt a new sustainable growth model that will boost their competitiveness in the market, reduce their operating costs, and maybe enter to new innovative sectors. Another role which is complementary to the previous effort is managing current and future risks that might arise effectively and making sure that sound investments and projects do take place and have a positive impact.
And what specific role has Piraeus been playing as a traditional bank in fighting climate change?
We try to demonstrate our commitment to sustainability and climate change with a focus on key environmental and social areas, including sustainable operations of ourselves, financing of sustainable activities such as renewable energy, green buildings, clean transportation, and contributing to the sustainable development of local communities in the Greek economy.
Thank you. And coming to you, Jay, can you run through how large fintechs like Finastra are contributing towards achieving net zero?
Yeah, sure, Helen. So we look at green finance with two lenses. The first is, how do we help the financial services industry as a whole reduce its carbon footprint, and particularly banks and other financial institutions? But we're also thinking about leveraging our technology to play this role of what we call an ecosystem orchestrator. So it's connecting all the market participants who are able or in a position to, you know, drive environmental action, and connect them through technology and APIs via our platform, FusionFab.cloud, to our solutions, to corporates, and obviously our customers and partners, to enable sustainable finance to be allocated to the places where it can have the most impact.
And Julianne, you obviously run Nossa Data. How can startups in the fintech space work towards these net zero goals?
Yeah, so I think that the market is changing in a way that from your earliest days, you need to consider the impact you're having on the people on the planet. And so even if you are an early stage startup, if you don't think about your fundamentals from day one, then you're just putting your own business at more and more risk as you grow. So we actually focus a lot of our time and energy with our clients on larger market players, such as public companies or companies that are pre-IPO. But what we see is that the pressure points for strong disclosure is coming earlier and earlier in a company's life cycle. And we ourselves, as a fintech startup, are actually already thinking about how can we monitor our performance on environmental factors and on social factors. And I think all fintechs need to start paying attention to that.
I'd like to focus on the topic of transparency. And let's start by briefly running through some of those industry standards that can demonstrate an organization's green credentials. Julianne, can we start with you on that?
Yeah, so there's been a ton of progress in terms of industry standards that help you define your sustainability metrics as a business. The market is actually often compared to what the financial reporting market looked like in the 1960s before we arrived at the GAAP standards. What it looks like today is there's around 8 to 10 dominant standards on the market for large institutions. And this is really helpful because for a long time, it was complete wild west in terms of disclosures. Companies could voluntarily disclose on anything they wanted. While we still hope that those 8 to 10 lead disclosures actually consolidate into maybe 2 or 3, there is at least guidance for big companies to follow in terms of what is expected by their investors, by clients they might be working with, by regulators. And that used to not be the case. And I hope that that continues to get more and more defined for companies so they actually know how they can measure and thus improve.
Picking up on your point about how people engage with customers, Julianne, how do businesses ensure that they are not doing business with companies that are just playing lip service to sustainability factors? You know, it's often referred to as greenwashing. How can they ensure that that's the case? Julianne, perhaps you'd like to take that first.
I think it's a very challenging question and something that will take a long time for there to be a true answer to. That's very good. I think if you consider B2C type products, so the products that we could buy to the grocery store where we buy our clothes, it's very hard for us as individuals to really scrutinize how those companies are doing, because we don't necessarily have the time, knowledge, or resources to do that to the extent needed. But where I do see a lot of progress actually beginning to happen is more business-to-business type sales, where you do have time to really dig into how a specific business is performing. And I actually regularly speak to companies that are trying to sell to another large companies. And in order to make that sale, they need to go through a full data audit, data disclosure process in order to actually work with other large companies. And I think that's great progress in the market. And I hope the progress on that end will eventually trickle down to the individual consumer to give us more oversight on what we're actually, the companies we're interacting with on our day-to-day basis.
Antonius, it'd be interesting to get your perspective on this too.
Well, it's a relationship. Every relationship has to be a sincere dialogue and built of trust. Non-financial disclosure is quite hard because it's not structured in a way. There's no standards, as Julianne mentioned, and it makes it harder to compare the performance from one company to another. There's a uniformity-induced change that's happening, and I think this is going to be clearer as we go along. But it's more or less disclosing the indices and the information that it's of value to the stakeholders involved, one thing, and taking all the actions necessary in order to see that that information is complete, sincere, and true and correct. And if it's not, take all the other actions that are necessary in order to provide such information, which is important. And you can measure everything. It's measuring the things that are important to you and are important for the stakeholders as well.
Yeah, Helen, I'll jump in there to pick up on your points around transparency and also how do consumers, investors know that their money is going where they intend it to go. So there are various frameworks around ESG and sustainability that are out there. At Financial, we align to the World Economic Forum stakeholder capitalism framework. And really, they take the best of the best standards across what they call the four Ps of planet, prosperity, people, and principles of governance. And under the environment, they promote the Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, so or TCFD, as the standard for environmental reporting. And they also, you know, to verify a carbon neutral roadmap. So we've committed to being carbon neutral by 2030. Really, any company can say that, right? But to verify it, there's a science-based target initiative, which is an entity that works with companies to make sure that their roadmap towards carbon neutrality is science-based and factual and accurate. And what this really means is, you know, puts the pressure on companies to measure their environmental impacts in a way that is consistent and can be compared to other businesses. And, you know, this is very, very important when you think about ESG investing or impact investing or even green finance, sustainable finance, because investors want to know that, you know, there are common standards that companies adhere to. And it can't just be self-disclosures, right? This information needs to be audited the same way your finance balance sheet is audited and verified. And this will give much more comfort, at least to the investor community, that their money is being allocated to companies that perform well in these aspects. And consumers is the next stage. And, you know, I'd love to see a price tag with not just the price, but the carbon emissions associated to products and services so that consumers can make more informed decisions too.
You're listening to Open Finance, the podcast series that believes the future of finance is open, brought to you by Finastra. Please rate, review, and subscribe through your usual podcast app. And looking at your own businesses and particularly partnerships, perhaps we can come to you again on this, Jay. How can you ensure that new partnerships which are undertaken are within a green framework? And can you exert any pressure on existing partners to up their game when it comes to working towards net zero?
That's a great question. I think, you know, there's two aspects. There's your supply chain or your scope 3 emissions, where you have complete discretion about who you work with and who you use in your supply chain. And, you know, around procurement, you can imply sustainability standards for the vendors that you work with, that they have to meet certain criteria to work with you. Our customers, you know, we're blessed at Finastra that we work with customers that have a similar vision, mission and ambition when it comes to environmental impact. But for those who are sort of haven't started that journey yet, we run a collaborative ESG program where we work with them in almost a consultancy way to advise them on how they can leverage their products and services to create environmental impact. You know, this could be the financing of retrofitting solar panels to people's homes, you know, to move away from fossil fuel energy, or, you know, to making sure you charge your electric car with renewable energy versus energy from the grid, which could come from fossil fuels. So, you know, on one side, your supply chain, scope 3, full discretion. Obviously, in terms of who you provide your services to, and, you know, who the customers that we're in their supply chain, they have the expectation of us, which is why we're so adamant that we want to be clear and open and honest about what we're doing as a business when it comes to ESG. You know, we're very keen to work with companies to help them to improve their environmental impact.
Great. And Antonius, how can you exert that same pressure on the partners with whom you're working with?
Well, we have major stakeholders as well. We have suppliers, we have investors, we have customers. We see that the largest impact that we can have is through our investing, through our financing, which is a particular product offering. So advising customers and making them understand that there's an investment opportunity in transitioning to something which is more sustainable would take time. But once you explain it and they see the value, I think it's an easier journey for them. So one thing is trying to measure and giving that specific advice of what are the risks that are entailed through their operations, why they can save money by transitioning to something which is renewable. Many factors like that and many propositions and product offerings that can be a value to them, I think, are quite important.
Helen, you know, I just want to add there. When I was at COP26 representing Finastra, we heard about some great solutions where, unfortunately, governments didn't really want to intervene and regulate markets and companies. You know, for an example being Celsa in Spain, they create green steel. So they collect scrap metal. They use an electric furnace, which is 9 times more carbon efficient than a blast oven furnace, which is used in traditional steel construction and manufacturing. And they weren't offered a subsidy to get their price point to the market rate, nor were the competitors taxed to raise the cost of their production. So in that way, this is where finance and fintech and financial services, particularly green finance, can level the playing field. What we can do there is give a loan to someone like Celsa at a much lower interest rate to help them grow and expand their business. And also for the customers of Celsa, provide them with access to sustainable and green finance so that the interest they pay on their loan is, again, more affordable than if they were to go to, you know, a typical steel manufacturer. So, you know, I think sustainable finance and financial institutions and fintech has a really key role to play in, you know, filling this gap that the government's created through the lack of market regulation.
I also might just jump in before we go on, because I want to comment on Jay's point. Something that's really important to remember is that we're all learning this together and that it's overwhelming a new industry for most companies to deal with. And so whether it's via a fintech technology partner or actually supporting your partners with providing the data, a lot actually needs to be done on the educational point of view. And in terms of a company's ability to provide data to the market, often they're lacking the in-house expertise for how to do that. Some might have budget to work with, say, an external consultant type person, but a lot wouldn't. And so actually thinking about how can you make sure that those gaps start getting filled so that education isn't a barrier to progress.
That's a great point to raise, Julianne. It also takes us nicely back to COP26 and how it's been apparent that there is this huge shift in behaviour in order to meet the Paris goals. How can your organisations help drive that behavioural change? Perhaps I can turn to you first, Antonius.
Thank you, Helen. I think it's beginning from your own house, let's say, beginning from your own corporation and introducing these changes and targeting at that behavioral change that could have an impact, and then sharing these best practices with your customers, your suppliers, with other stakeholders, and having a sincere dialogue and a partnership that can lead to create a bigger impact and create a bigger synergy, let's say, with the ultimate goal in achieving a carbon neutral economy.
And Jay, what role is Finastra playing in driving that behavioral change?
Before we even talk about Finastra or other corporates, it's important to understand the different players, right? There's the government, there's corporates, and there's individuals. But corporates really are that thread between governments and individuals as it pertains to, you know, how we achieve the environmental goals from Paris. I think there's a few points here. The first is you've got to be walking the talk yourself, right? You've got to lead by example. So, you know, at Finastra, we have very, very clear environmental objectives, and we're trying to drive a cultural shift within the business. So we want to, one, ensure that every single ESG stakeholder who's working on a particular aspect of the business that has an environmental impact is aware of the sort of the ESG impact, and then also provide the education to them and the training to them to ensure that we can report on that accurately. It comes from top down, so leadership really needs to enforce it. And then also you need that bottom up grassroots, those grassroots movements. So, you know, things like employee networks that come together to think about how we can do things to help the environment are very, very important. But thinking about how you change your business to consider the environmental consequences of decisions, I think is a very, very important one.
And Julianne, how is NOSA Data working to drive that behavioral change?
One of the things that we really focus on educating is that ESG and this type of reporting and disclosure needs to be viewed as business as usual from now on going forward. For many years, it was not part of the standard business needs. And I would say there's still a transition where people are realizing that. And so actually, one of the first questions we ask companies that we're working with is, where's the drive for ESG coming within your organization? What we really want to hear is that it's coming from the top, because what you want is you want C-level executives and boards driving this across all the different departments, because it's not something that can happen in an isolated department where they don't have budget, they don't have any kind of means to influence the business. This is really about thinking of full end-to-end integration and how you think across all of your different departments, all of the different stakeholders touching your business, and actually are really pushing for progress on these different areas. And so I think that's really where we want to emphasize, and it's senior leaders voicing that story through their organizations. It's employees challenging their companies if they're not hearing that story. It's people who want to work with certain clients requiring this information. And so it's all of these things coming together to make it, this is something that we're doing. This is just how the businesses are now run.
That's great. And it's actually good to hear that you're all saying something very similar, actually. You know, this has to come from the top to drive that behavioral change. So final question for each of you. Perhaps you can each offer one suggestion. What more could be done or what should be done? Julianne, starting with you.
I think the louder that each individual is, the louder each company is in terms of how we can actually collectively work towards these issues, the faster change is going to happen. I think that the reason why we've seen progress recently is because so many different stakeholders have started discussing the progress that needs to happen. And I think that still needs to get louder. I think that still needs to improve even more. And we all need to keep challenging the status quo.
And Jay, what would be the one thing that you would like to see?
Well, I think all corporates should take it upon themselves to ensure that they're adhering to environmental reporting requirements and disclosure requirements, and thinking about what they're uniquely placed to solve for when it comes to the planetary issues. Every company has to establish their purpose, has to ensure that every single employee that's on the journey understands that purpose also, and that there is a ticking clock, really, when it comes to the environment and the things that we need to do to ensure our survival on the planet. So, you know, we're all got a role to play, like I said, individuals, corporates, and governments. But it starts with one person. Be the change that you want to see in the world.
Antonius, what more can be done or what should be done?
I think, you know, everyone, Jay, Julianne mentioned that we're talking about a change. It's a massive structural change. And it's the first time that we know where we're heading, where we want to go. So the target is clear. The technology is helping us a lot. We need a greater commitment and greater partnerships, let's say, among ourselves in order to come closer to that target and a lot sooner, which is important.
Well, thank you all for joining the conversation today. That was Julianne Flesher of NOSA Data, Jay McKee from Finastra, and Antonios Sagris of Piraeus Financial Holdings. Thank you all.
Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, have a listen to the other episodes in this series. We're exploring what can be done to address AI bias and what embedded finance means for the future of banks. And do please rate, review, and subscribe through your usual podcast app. I'm Helen Driver. Thanks for listening to Open Finance, the podcast series that believes the future of finance is open. Brought to you by Finastra.